Thank you. Can you hear me? I think this is fine. Okay.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Third speaker, we figured it out.
All right. Thank you. So, as you can see, we were trying to look at what are the short-term effects of quitting smoking and then the long-term gains. My co-author is not here today, Dr. Bakchi. I just want to disclose that the following personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation existed during the past 12 months. There is no such relationship to disclose. Just to give you a background information about obesity and smoking in the United States, as from the first two presenters, we know that obesity and smoking are both public health problems. And currently, we have about 400,000 premature deaths as a result of smoking. At the same time, obesity is also associated with several chronic conditions such as cardiovascular diseases and some types of cancers, respiratory diseases, and so on and so forth. We have about 19.3% of Americans who are currently smoking, and you have about 35.7% obesity here in the U.S. In the past 15 years alone, between 1995 and 2010, we have had about 74% increase in obesity prevalence here in the U.S., whilst you have smoking decreasing by 24%. Now, this simultaneous increase in prevalence of obesity and decrease in smoking triggers some suspicion that there might be some relationship to the two. So you had a lot of research going into this in the late 80s and the early 90s. And most of the research confirmed that there is some association between the two. But the question became, what is the extent of the risk? Some said it's very low risk, others said it's very high risk. And there were some few other research too that said there wasn't any. The purpose of this study was to use population-based data to estimate the level of risk associated with quitting obesity and how long can this persist if somebody quits smoking. We had two aims going into this study. The first one was to estimate the association between smoking cessation and the risk of obesity. And the second one was to estimate the effect of time, because we'll be going back to look at how long people have quit smoking and the odds. So these two research aims also generated two research questions. Does smoking cessation influence the risk of being obese? And if it is, at the population level, how does time since somebody quit smoking play a role here? To answer these two questions, we used 2009-2010 National Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey, BRFSS. Our sample size was close to 800,000 people. And because we were going back to about 10 years or after since somebody quit smoking, we decided to exclude people who were under the age of 30. Considering the smoking initiation age, we thought that people who were under the age of 30, very few people might have quit smoking in the past 10 years, so we excluded them from our analysis. We also excluded people who were missing data on smoking and obesity. Analysis was stratified by sex because we know that nicotine acts on the sex hormones differently for both males and females. And we analyzed this in multivariable logistic regression in South Calabo, Sudan, to take into account the complex survey design of this study. Our main dependent variable was obesity, and that was defined as having body mass index of 30 or higher. Our main independent variables were two: smoking status, and that was categorized into three levels: current smoker, former smoker, and somebody who has never smoked. And we also had time since quit smoking, and that had five levels. And that was between 0 to 6 months, 6 months to 1 year, 1 year to 5 years, 5 years to 10 years, and 10 years and longer. These were our covariates because we know that this definitely impacted the relationship, so we had to include them in the model. These were physical inactivity, and that is adults who had no physical exercise or who had no activity in the past 30 days beside their work. And heavy drinking was also included, and that is defined as adult men having more than 2 drinks per day and adult women having more than 1 drink per day in the past 30 days. We also included frequent mental distress. The first two presenters spoke about that. Having frequent mental distress is regarded as having 14 days or more in the past 30 days when mental health wasn't good. And we also included other demographic variables such as age, race, and income. So these are our results. Most of our study sample were non-Hispanic whites, followed by Hispanics. And they, we have females being a little older than males in this study. And the average income, we have more than 50% of our study sample making more than $50,000 a year. These are some selected characteristics of our study sample by smoking status. So the FMD is frequent mental distress. Those who said they had frequent mental distress, that means they had 14 days or more in the past 30 days when mental health wasn't good. You have about 35% prevalence of smoking among this group compared to 16.3 among those who did not report FMD. And this was consistent with females' values also. You have 31% prevalence, and then you have 13% prevalence for those who did not report frequent mental distress. Also, physical inactivity, you have 26% prevalence of physical inactivity among those who are current, sorry, you have 26% smoking prevalence among those who said they did not engage in any form of physical activity in the past 30 days, against 15.6. And finally, heavy drinking, you have 37.6% prevalence of smoking status among those who said they heavily drank in the past 30 days compared to those who did not. And I was just reading the males' values, but as you can see here, the females' values seems very similar. These are some selected characteristics of our study subject by obesity status. So those who reported having frequent mental distress, you have about 38.5% who are currently obese, compared to 29.5% among those who did not report frequent mental distress. And physical inactivity, 37.9%, which makes intuitive sense, against 28%. And heavy drinking, 30.5% against 28%. Now, I need to mention that the physical inactivity here is not meeting recommendation for physical activity. It was just a question to whether somebody exercised. It could be just walking around the neighborhood in the past 30 days beside their work. So overall, we have about 29.2% prevalence of obesity in our study population, with men having higher prevalence than females. Smoking status overall was 16.6%, but males had higher prevalence of smoking than females. And these two numbers were statistically significantly different from each other, males and females' values. This is prevalence of obesity by smoking status. And as you can see here, the shortest bar is the current. So those who are currently smoking, you have the lowest prevalence of obesity compared to former smokers, which has the highest bars here, and then those who said they have never smoked. So this is for those who are former smokers. So we looked at time since they quit smoking. And as you can see here, the first bar represents current smokers, and you go to the next bar, which is those who have quit smoking in the past 6 months. And those bars look higher or taller than those who are currently smoking. And when you go to the next bar, which is 6 months to 1 year, you see that those bars are also a lot taller than those who have quit smoking between 0 to 6 months. But after that, it seems to not increase in height again, but it seems to come down just a little bit, even after 10 years. So we decided to include to calculate this odds in multivariable logistic regression to look at the odds of being obese when somebody quit smoking at the population level, because this is a population data. And we found out that the odds is about 1.59 for those who had quit smoking, that is former smokers, compared to current smokers. And that's for males, and females is about 1.53. And as you can see here, these numbers are statistically significant. And this model has already adjusted for race, age, income, drinking status, physical inactivity level, and mental health status. So we are also going to look at the adjusted odds associated with time since people have quit smoking. So this table refers to only people who are former smokers. And as you can see here, within 6 months, the odds gets to about 1.46 for males, and then it reaches 1.71 within 1 year, which is the highest that it went. And it began to fall a little bit to 1.65, and we had about 1.55 after 10 years. So it didn't decrease that much. For females, it wasn't as high as for males, but the pattern is consistent and it's very similar. So this is just to show you kind of like a visual way to represent the first the table I just explained to you right now. So you can see that male's line is the red, and it's reaching the highest peak within a year. And female's line is the green. The middle one is the overall. And as you can see here, male's values come down a little bit compared to female's values. Now, I need to mention that these are individuals who are aging. So issue about age can also set in, and that can also, we know as people age, metabolic rate decreases, and that also paves way for increasing in BMI. So that could also play a role here. But in general sense, you can see that it doesn't decrease that much even after quitting smoking for a long time. So in concluding this study, we found from this study that smoking cessation is associated with increased odds of being obese. And this is consistent with previous studies. The odds begin within 6 months, and it peaks around 1 year. So that is one good thing that we can also emphasize as public health officials, that we have odds that people have higher odds of being obese once they quit smoking, but the odds doesn't stay that high. At least it gets to a point when it doesn't increase anymore. So if we encourage people to exercise and do other things, they could lose weight. Also, the odds of being obese after cessation is higher among males than among females, but it tends to decrease with time among males than we saw among females. Just to give you some overall possible explanations as to why this is plausible based on the, some previous literature. One is that nicotine has effect on the dopamine and serotonin pathway to decrease hunger and at the same time increase resting metabolic rate. So it means those who are currently smoking feel less hunger. At the same time, whatever they consume, they are able to use those energy without having excess calories to store. The second one is smoking cessation can trigger mood episode, and she mentioned that in the second presentation. So you have people who said they quit smoking and they can't deal with depression or issues about stress, and that is one thing that people think it put people at less attentive of engaging in healthy behaviors. And then the last one is smoking cessation involves replacement of smoking cravings and tobacco withdrawal symptoms with other activities. So that oral thing, you have to put something in your mouth. So if it's not tobacco, it has to be food or something else. So that can also increase people's risk of being obese. So what are the public health implications? Considering the health benefits of quitting smoking, the weight gain after cessation should not be a reason for a relapse or a reason to begin smoking again. And as public health, we have to emphasize that smoking cessation should also include programs that will deal with the issue about weight gain and to address those issues as well. And we hope that if that is emphasized a lot, we are going to reduce a lot of relapse. And one thing that I need to put out is that it is always good never to start smoking. These are the limitations to this study. This data was obtained from self-report. So of course, some of those behaviors which are considered as not acceptable to society might be underreported. And this analysis was from secondary data, so there were some variables that we could not have in this model to control for. And we know they will impact this relationship, such as caloric intake. And this result cannot be generalized to institutionalized or individuals without landlines. And we know they might be different from the general population. And this cross-sectional study does not allow us to infer causation. So we don't know which one came first. So that is one thing we cannot say for sure. And these were my references to this study. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We do have a few minutes for questions. Yes, please.
So what about sugar as an alternative reinforcer?
Can you repeat the question?
You asked then, how about sugar being, I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
My question is, since nicotine stimulating dopamine, maybe they're substituting sugar for nicotine.
Yeah, that is something that people have been looking at, but it's another thing on its own, and I'm not sure how that is going to work, to substitute sugar for nicotine. I'm not sure how that's going to work.
And I'm not sure what you mean. A lot of smokers switch to sugar after they quit.
Yeah, that is something, yeah. And sugar too is, now people are thinking sugar is also addictive. People are saying that people who consume sugar keep consuming them. You don't feel like you are full. You keep consuming and consuming and consuming and you gain weight. And that is one thing people are proposing, but it's not something that I really looked at in this study.
Right, it's not measured.
Yeah. Other questions? Okay.
Because nicotine can be delivered in other ways, is there less weight gain with those who use nicotine replacement as part of their cessation effort?
I didn't look at that, and we didn't have that information here. But I can tell you now, nicotine is not, irrespective of how you deliver nicotine, it's not healthy, honestly. That part which is still the part which make people addictive is still there. So whether people deliver nicotine through this e-cigarette or whatever, that addictive part is still there. So if people begin to shy away from nicotine, that effect will still linger, and they will have that cravings and everything. So I didn't look at that, but from previous studies, it doesn't seem like delivering nicotine in other forms besides cigarettes, such as e-cigarette, is a good way that people will still, you know, avoid all these problems.
Seems like that could be a great study, though, to look at the difference between smoked tobacco.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.